Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr, and 50 years ago, right now, the Beatles were on a Pan Am flight headed to JFK for their first U.S. appearance, arriving at about 1:20 p.m. to thousands of screaming fans and a couple hundred eager journalists. Sunday marks the 50th anniversary of their first Ed Sullivan Show appearance and the beginning of the British invasion. We're hearing a little bit of All My Loving from that performance right here.
And I'll send all my love to you.
And joining me to mark this 50th anniversary is Jim Von Schilling, the Baby Boomer Studies Area Chair for the American and Popular Culture Associations. He's also Professor of English and Humanities at Northampton Community College and a big Beatles fan. Welcome back to WNYC, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jim, some of us don't even go to JFK to pick up our loved ones. But 50 years ago today, 5,000 fans, mostly young women, went to welcome the Beatles. Let's listen first to a clip from their very funny press conference at JFK. We'll hear Paul, John, and Ringo here. And the question was, what do you think your music does for people?
What do you think your music does for these people?
I don't know. It pleases them, I think. Well, they must do, because they're buying it.
Why does it excite them so much?
We don't know, really. I've been here before with another group and be managers.
That laughter from John Lennon's quip, if we knew, we'd form another group and be managers. Could you set the scene for us at JFK? Why was this arrival such a big deal?
Well, first, I just want to comment on what John said, because that's sort of what happened after the Beatles, that other managers decided to form groups and try and get what the Beatles had, but nobody actually succeeded. As far as the event at Kennedy Airport, I think it's interesting because, first of all, if you look at the films, you know, no security clearance, no TSA. It was a kind of an unruly mob just sort of swarming onto the deck of the old International Arrivals building and just kind of swarming around the airport. You sort of also are interested as to why they were able to get there on a Friday afternoon. This was a school day, but part of what happened was the flight had been publicized all morning on AM radio stations. Again, something you would never see happening today, where they actually gave you the details of the flight, the time, where
to
it was
show up
arrive.
To swarm the celebrities. Yes.
Yeah. Sure. So that really encouraged young people to get out there. Now, whether they were cutting class or had gotten out early, that's kind of a mystery. There is some talk that the radio stations were encouraging through inducements of free T-shirts and maybe even paying for some of their fare. But there's no positive evidence that that's exactly what happened. But I think today we call it a flash mob, and we look at like Twitter and Facebook and say, well, you know, that's responsible. But back in those days, the social media would be the AM rock DJs. Back then it was WINS, WMCA, WA Beatles C, and they were very competitive, and the DJs were doing everything they could to make whatever connection they could make themselves to the Beatles. So the connection this day was they knew the information about the flight, and that was an inducement to get young people to go to the airport.
And the mob showed up. So I mentioned that around 5,000 people went to the airport to welcome the Beatles. This is a long shot, but if any of you listeners out there were there at JFK 50 years ago, we want to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And again, Sunday marks the 50th anniversary of that famous performance at the Ed Sullivan Show, and there were only 728 seats in the audience in that theater, so it's an even longer shot. But if you were in that studio out there, we want to hear your story. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. But Jim Von Schilling, how popular were the Beatles prior to their arrival 50 years ago today?
What had happened was the music started to get played on the radio stations here in late December during Christmas break. So during Christmas break and during the month of January was when the American public, for the most part, and the teenagers became aware of the Beatles. It was being promoted heavily on the radio stations, and it was also, they were showing up in like Life magazine and Look magazine and a couple little TV news features. So by the time the Beatles actually showed up, they had the number one song, and their album, Meet the Beatles, their first album, had been out for maybe 2 weeks and was, you know, climbing up the charts themselves. So the popularity was just beginning. Kind of ironically, if you watched that first telecast on the Ed Sullivan Show, you weren't really hearing the Beatles the way they were meant to be heard, because the mics had been misadjusted during the afternoon. The Beatles actually performed twice on Sunday. They performed to a similar audience, a screaming audience, in the afternoon. It was a dress rehearsal. And at some point between the dress rehearsal and the program, the mics were changed. And so the Beatles at night, you could hardly hear John Lennon. So nowadays you look back and it just doesn't sound exactly right. But it was enough, I guess, at the time to really propel their popularity the next day.
Thrill the audiences. Well, listen to this. We got a caller, Elizabeth in Chelsea. Where were you 50 years ago today?
Well, I was working in a public relations firm in New York, and the person that I was working for was an internship from Bennington College, and the person I was working for was representing the Denim Council, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the Denim Council was trying to start a fad that Beatles fans would wear denim jackets and draw pictures of their favorite Beatle in chalk on the back of the denim jacket. So I had a denim jacket with, I don't remember which Beatle, drawn on the back, and she had bunches of people. She mobilized a gang.
You were a plant to start a fad.
You bet.
Did the fad take off?
I don't think so.
And what do you remember about that scene, Elizabeth, being at the airport on that day?
I just remember that it was nuts. I mean, I more remember the preparations, and I don't think I actually saw them. My recollection is maybe that they were late.
They were late. You
that
were waiting and waiting.
Late. I don't remember that, but I do remember that we went out there in a cab. It was February, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1:20 in the afternoon. Thank you so much for your call, Elizabeth.
Sure.
We, Roe in Soho, you greeted the Beatles at the other end of their trip?
Yes, I did indeed. I was at Heathrow Airport on the Sunday when they returned from their first very exciting and successful New York trip.
And what do you remember about that scene?
My goodness, it was sort of chaos the other end, because I think what happened is that the Brits caught the fire that was lit by the U.S. People as well, and it was very, very exciting to see them come home again after their huge success. And so myself and two other friends, I was at school then, went to the airport, much against my parents' wishes. We spent the whole night there because we wanted to get a prime spot on one of the balconies overlooking the where their plane would come in. There were thousands and thousands of people there, and there was no organization, there was no security, there was no police, nothing. So we just milled around the airport, and then when they came in, we didn't see them. But we walked through out of the airport at the end, being slightly disappointed because we didn't see them, and walked through the tunnels out of the airport. And as we got out of the tunnel, coming up to a traffic light on the London Road, which is where the road that leads into London, there they were. They stopped at the traffic light, and there was their car. And so we actually got to see them. I was standing like 2 feet away from their car.
How exciting, Ro. Thank you so much.
It was terribly exciting, but all my Britishness came to the fore, and I just stood there and said, how do you do?
They handled it a little differently over on the other side of the pond. Thank you for your call, Ro. We also got a comment on our website from a listener, Karen of New York City, and she says she wasn't at the airport, but she was at the Plaza Hotel where the Beatles stayed during their time in New York City. I was 13. My mother forbade me to go, but I went anyway. My first no ma'am act. My allowance was docked for a month, but I didn't care. I met kids from all over the city and the world, had a wonderful time. A liberating experience for a kid from Brooklyn. The Beatles were about more than just the Beatles.
That's very true. I like to express a liberating experience. What was happening here, too, I mean, you can look at it various ways, but one is it was the maturing of the baby boomer generation kind of happening before our eyes. They had been involved in other crazes before, like when they were kids, there was a Davy Crockett craze. But here's a situation where now there's money in their pockets, and now they're the consumers, and now they're the ones going out and buying their own clothes or getting a haircut, or in some cases deciding not to get haircuts. And so the Beatles were something for them to share and to kind of spend money on and actually kind of become part of them.
I want to play Ed Sullivan's introduction to the Beatles when they showed up on the show on Sunday, a few days after arriving in New York City. He really knew how to introduce this act and just got out of the way. Let's take a listen.
Now, yesterday and today, our theater's been jammed with newspapermen and hundreds of photographers from all over the nation, and these veterans agree with me that the city never has witnessed the excitement stirred by these youngsters from Liverpool who call themselves the Beatles. Now, tonight, you're going to twice be entertained by them, right now and again in the second half of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
And the screams. 73 million mm-hmm. people watched the show that night. How big was that for a television audience at that time?
Oh, it was huge. Big audiences before that, even for Ed Sullivan, were something like 30 to 40 million, and that was a very big audience. So to get such a huge audience, and then who were those extra people who were watching? They're not necessarily the adults in the world at that time. It was really the young people, the baby boomers. So it was showing two things, you know, how big an audience TV could attract, but also how big an audience the baby boomers would make if they were actually all involved in sharing one experience, which is what kind of the Beatles created for the baby boomers.
Yeah, the first time we realized the baby boomers were going to dominate our cultural perceptions.
Absolutely.
For years to come. Anne in Brooklyn, what do you remember about watching the Ed Sullivan Show 50 years ago?
Oh, hi. You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Well, I was 10. Living in Brooklyn, we lived in a small apartment. We had a tiny room, which was called the TV room, because it was the only thing you had in there was a TV and a couch. And I was brought to the TV to watch this show. And I, and not just myself, but I had not seen boys who had long hair like that. And I was convinced that they were wearing wigs. And I mean, really. And when I went to school the next day and talked with my friends, I went to a Catholic school, all-girls Catholic school. We were all convinced that they were wearing wigs. We really loved it. It was really exciting to be a young person here. We used to go to the candy store and buy, like, you know how they have baseball cards?
Uh-huh.
Well, they used to have something like baseball cards, but with a picture of one of the Beatles. And the big deal at that time was, like, who was your favorite Beatle?
Beatles,
you
collecting
know, like,
cards.
Who was for the George, and who was for Paul, and who was for Ringo? And you would buy these baseball cards with their picture on it and collect them.
I think that continues to this day. Anne, thanks so much for your call. A producer notes that hair thing, Jim, was actually something that they were asked about by reporters. They were asked if they were going to get haircuts or if they were wearing wigs.
Yeah, or if they were bald. And supposedly the Beatles were surprised at how kind of inane the questions were being asked. And I think it's partly because the reporters that showed up were just kind of covering the local beat, and we're not necessarily music reporters or entertainment reporters, and they just ask a lot of silly questions like, are you for real? Things like that. And so the Beatles' answers were very kind of comical and witty, showing us how funny they were, but it was also partly their own reaction to the fact that the questions they were being asked were foolish in the first place.
And one more question on that, which Beatle are you a fan of collection cards among young girls? And we mm-hmm. were struck watching back to the videos, the young girls in the audience weren't just screaming. They were making kissing faces. They were using their tongues. It was young women expressing desire in a way. And was that unique to the Beatles, or had we seen something like that before with Elvis or something?
I think that was unique as far as the baby boomer generation. And you also have to realize, if you're talking about the girls in the theater, that was a very exclusive collection of young women. You had to be well-connected to get tickets. They had 50,000 requests for tickets. So tickets went to families who's connected to advertising agencies, to the sponsors, to CBS. So you're seeing girls who are going to private schools and headed on to private colleges and and probably being one of the first wave of feminists. And so if you think about the song I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, this is like early, and we heard him scream.
The precursor
first,
to
first
that.
Big outburst.
Jim Von Schilling, he's the Baby Boomer Studies Area Chair for the American and Pop Culture Associations. He's also Professor of English and Humanities at Northampton Community College. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure.
And
thank
we'll
you.
Go out on She Loves You.
Be good.